Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. If you'd like to have your Bibles open in front of you to that passage we read in Matthew 7, that'd be helpful. Have you broken it? It's working. Martin broke it with his PowerPoint, didn't he? Okay. I don't know how you are discerning at home. I don't know if you have had this experience of getting an email and you're not sure if it's a true email or not, one of those scam emails. I don't know how you spot a real one and what you do, what lengths you go to when you're working online to see if something's fake or not. What you're looking for, what you're on the lookout for, whether it's genuine. Maybe you perhaps do a bit of Googling around the company name. Maybe you check for that, the S and the HTTPS thing to make sure it's a secure thing. Or you perhaps look at the address that it's been sent from. If your bank details are at risk, you perhaps take a bit of effort, don't you? You make a bit of effort if you think you're going to be losing money to these con artists. You're going to be on the lookout for it. And the same comes as well these days, doesn't it, for fake news, for news reports that are fake. We are bombarded all day, every day, aren't we, by information. You know, the idea today that we get more information in a week's worth of newspapers than a Victorian would have had in a lifetime idea. We need to be careful and check out the provenance of what we're receiving, what we're reading, what we're looking at. Particularly if things were at risk, like our bank account, our bank balances, our futures, our reputation. I don't know if you've had that experience. Jesus here is telling us to watch out for scammers, for con artists, for fake news, for fake storytellers, for fake prophets, for pseudo prophets. He's telling us that what we experience today with false teachers in the church is nothing new. It's much more serious than losing your bank details. It's going to be much more significant for you in the long run than having your card cloned or losing some cash or having your identity stolen. This is about being sold false promises and lies by a false teacher who's telling you false lies, falseness and lies about God and what it is that God has done and your very eternal there are very eternal consequences. Your eternal existence depends on you being able to discern between truth and lies when it comes to this book and when it comes to teachers of the Bible. There's more to it than just having a card cloned. Remember that the Sermon on the Mount is this sermon, this particular piece of teaching that Jesus gave to his disciples. He was on a mountain speaking to his nearest and dearest, his closest, his followers, the people he was teaching. He was training them up. They were the people he was training to take on from him after he was gone. And around him, a group of other people followed on that mountain. A movement of people following this amazing teacher over a period of a few years was bringing them fresh and exciting ideas about religion, about faith, about what it meant to live for God. In a world where Jewish legalism reigned, this man Jesus came along and blew all of that out of the water. He came with a very fresh new idea. He told them, as we found out in the Sermon on the Mount, that what is going on inside us is what matters. It's getting your heart right that makes the difference, not our external actions to some extent. It's our internal mindset. It's our DNA. It's what's at the heart of us that makes the difference. Jesus has spent quite a bit of time explaining that to begin with. At the heart is what's important. And he's drawing to the conclusion of his sermon now. He's getting towards the end of it. He summarized with this golden rule. He said that you need to treat others as you want to be treated. He's then gone on to talk about what it's like to live in the kingdom. So he's told us how we can be in the kingdom, and he told us what people's hearts should be like if they're kingdom people. And he tells us then, this is how you should then treat others as you want to be treated. Don't be a hypocrite. He's reminded us that being in the kingdom is a binary existence. You're either in it and living in the narrow way, or you're not and you're going in completely the wrong direction. Those two paths are diametrically opposed. They cannot exist in the same, they cannot go to the same place. And we learnt that last week, last Sunday morning. Two ways to live, and they are totally different directions. And now he turns our attention to who it is that we should be listening to, where we should be finding out our information about this pathway, about this life, how we should be shaping our thinking, where we should get our teaching from. And in this little section here, these five, six verses here this morning, we see what happens when some people don't have the right mindset, when you don't have the right core beliefs and the right heart, where leaders and teachers with those wrong core beliefs and those wrong teachings try to influence others. You see, we can't see the thoughts and attitudes of each other. You can't see what's in my heart. Even if I told you what was in my heart, I could be lying. The only way, Jesus says, of knowing what people's DNA, what their core beliefs are, is by seeing what they do. And that's what Martin said with this fruit. The only way you can see, I mean, Martin's got fruit on his trees. I've got three apple trees in my garden with no fruit on them because they're new. I planted them this year and last year, and they don't have any fruit on them. They had a little bit of blossom, but you don't take fruit in the first 2 years, do you? I don't know which one's which. Yeah, I do, because I remember where I put them. But you couldn't tell me, probably, unless you're an apple expert, which one's the Bramley, which one's the James Pearmain, and which one is the Worcester Pearmain, and the Laxton Superb that I put in this year. You couldn't tell me that, I don't suppose. Only in a few years' time, when we see them come to fruit, will we know which one's which. And you'll know that by seeing it, tasting it, and experiencing the fruit. You'll recognize them by their fruit, is what Jesus said. So these false teachers, we need to be on the lookout for these false teachers. We can't see what's inside them, what is underlying their theories, but we can see that by finding out what they do, what we actually see from it. And so Jesus is telling us today to look out for false teachers. Their actions will always give them away. When we are looking at teachers, and as Martin said, we as a church are hearing lots of people speak at the moment. We're hearing new preachers come through. We need to look for action as well as words. But beyond that, this isn't just about up the front preachers. We all have a role of sharing teaching. We all share God's word with our friends and families. We are teachers, all of us. And we have to be sure that our actions are right, are good, that we're having good fruit. There it is. So there are false teachers, Jesus says, and they come to you in sheep's clothing. The first few verses here, isn't it? They look sound, they look safe, they look gentle and all fluffy and all cute, although sheep are stupid. They'll fit in well, won't they? That's what Jesus is saying here. This is an old fable of Aesop's. This is one of Aesop's fables from about 600 BC about a wolf that dressed up in sheep's clothes and actually then got eaten first by the farmer, by the shepherd, because he was hungry. And so that's Aesop's fable. So it was probably a well-known story. It was probably a well-known metaphor that Jesus was tapping into there. But they look good, don't they? They blend in well, the wolf in sheep's clothing. They're deceptive. They won't stand out. They won't come in and we won't instantly go, "Oh, something sounds wrong there. Doesn't quite look right." Our first impressions may well be of blending in. Why does a wolf dress up in sheep's clothing? I don't think wolves ever do. But metaphorically, why would a wolf ever dress in a sheep's clothing? Not to get to know the sheep better. Not to try and blend in, other than to kill and eat and destroy the flock. That's the only reason that false teachers will want to blend in, because they want to undermine and destroy the good work that God is doing. So they are deceptive, first of all. They are dangerous. They are ferocious. They are ravenous. They are hungry. They're an angry, ferocious predator that wants only one thing, that has only one thing in mind, and that is to eat and destroy on the flock and on the sheep, on God's people. So they're deceptive, they're dangerous, but they will be destroyed. You notice that, don't you? At the end of verse 15, at the end of verse 19, every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. They will have their comeuppance. They will be destroyed. Maybe in the present. Maybe people will have their comeuppance now. And there have been lots of stories, I know, of people who have put themselves up on a pedestal and turned out to be false teachers who have ended up getting into trouble and we've found out problems about them in their personal lives, and they've had their comeuppance now. But maybe not in this life. Maybe in the life to come, they will get their judgment from God. And that's not for us to call. It's not for us to call out, and it's not for us to try. That's God's job to judge. It's not my job, thankfully, because I'd be rubbish at it. So who was Jesus talking about, these deceptive, dangerous wolves? Well, there were people who looked the part. They gave the impression that they know their scriptures. They showed the scriptures really well. Maybe when Jesus was speaking, think when Jesus was speaking, first century Palestine, think of the people around him at the time. They would have made people feel good about themselves. They would have made people say, oh God, I thank you, I'm not like that tax collector. They would have listened to him and went, oh God, I'm so glad I'm not like them. Thank you for showing me that I'm special and better than everybody else by hearing that wonderful word. When Jesus gave warnings like this, he was often referring to the Pharisees. That warning word, at the start of verse 15, watch out, Jesus tends to use in two ways. One, to watch out for ourselves and our hearts, and he also uses it to watch out for the Pharisees, the scribes and the Sadducees, the religious rulers and the elite. And you need to understand the context of this part of the world at this time. The religious authority, the Pharisees, the scribes, in a highly religious country, was synonymous with civil society and lawmaking in a way. I know the Romans were in charge, really, but in this part here, that what the Pharisees were and what society and government were very, very intertwined. We don't have that these days so much, not really at all. Government and faith aren't linked in that way, but they were so intertwined that it became rule of law, rightness with God. Your relationship with God was determined by what these people were telling you to do, and they were almost inseparable. And these Pharisees went round and told people what they thought God was telling them to do and how to live. They gave direct instructions, either from their own interpretation of the Old Testament scriptures, either by interpreting the scriptures, or by interpreting history and tradition, and saying, well, we've always done it this way, and if you don't do it this way, then you're not going to be pleasing God. Creating this sense of right and wrong in society, good and evil, and boxing people into that world. And I'd ask the question this morning, where do we get that information from now? Where are we learning what it is that the Bible is teaching us today? From the front, yes, we need to be discerning of what Martin, what me, Tony, John, preach week by week, and all the other guys we've got coming in over the next few weeks and months. We need to be thinking carefully on that one. We need to be listening on home groups, women's Bible studies, when we meet together in small groups. We need to be discerning and listening. Not in a suspicious way, clearly, but we need to be listening. But what else do? We read. We read good books. We need to just be thoughtful of them. I had an uncle, pastor, my dad's brother, who I mentioned, an author, and he said, just be careful. He said, you need to just be careful with that guy. It was a great book. He says, no problem with the book. It's a really good book, but just be careful. He said, you need to, you know, chew the straw and spit out the sticks with him. Like, you know, you need to chew up the straw and spit out the sticks. There'll be some stuff in there that you just need to be careful of. There's some stuff in his writings that are great. It was really helpful. We need to be discerning. What about online, though? What about in our online world? Some great preaching on YouTube. Great things you can download from other churches. Some wonderful sermons out there. And I'm not saying you only stick to a very narrow group of people that you want to listen to, but you must be discerning with who we listen to. See, time and time again, Jesus berated these hypocrites. I think, I could be wrong, but my feeling of how, or my take on how the Gospels play out, is Jesus spent significantly more time berating angrily the hypocrites of the Pharisees, the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, almost more than any other group in that society. The people who laid up burdens that we couldn't carry. over and over again, it's the Pharisees that got Jesus' condemnation. So what should we be looking out for then today? What should we be looking out for? Well, it's actions, isn't it? It's the actions. Let's look at this fruit thing. So we need to be discerning because these people are dangerous and deceptive and they will be destroyed. So there's some hope there. But how are we going to know? How are we going to know? Because it says that, doesn't it? By their fruit, you will recognize them. And that recognize is about knowing. It's about experiencing. Not a vague thought. It's a real convinced knowledge that you recognize that that person is a false teacher. You don't pick grapes from goods from thorn bushes. You don't pick figs from thistles. And Jesus says, likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, and every bad tree, bad fruit. We've got a plum tree at home, Victoria plum tree. It's a lovely plum tree. It's absolutely laden down, but it's got a plum coddling moth. That's a plum moth that we've had for a number of years. I can't get rid of it. And for the first bunch of fruit that are really ripe, they ripen the first lot beautifully, but they've all got a tiny little pink maggot inside them. And you never tell until you've bitten into it, which is why you need to check them with knives first. But this tree, I don't think, it does eventually bear good fruit, I suppose, but really, it's not a good tree at the moment. It's not providing good fruit. And I need to do something about it. You see, a fruit tree cannot lie. It can't lie. A fruit cannot lie. It's either going to be an apple or it's going to be a pear. I'm going to be very surprised if my fig tree comes up with something different like a banana this year. It's not going to happen, is it? It sounds like I've got a massive garden. I've just crammed a lot of fruit trees into a very small space. I like growing fruit. So what kind of actions, what fruit actions would Jesus, would his followers have recognized? What would have been the underlying DNA, the core of that tree would only generate that fruit? What would it have been? What would it have been? Well, let's just, if you want to just look through to Matthew 12 for a second. Jesus continues this argument, this line, and he does carry this idea of fruit along a bit, actually. And we'll come to a bit longer, a bit further on in Matthew as well. He continues to attack the Pharisees, and he says, make a tree good, and this is Matthew 12, verse 33. He says, make a tree good and its fruit will be good, or make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad. For a tree is recognized by its fruit. And this is where he really goes for it. This is a little bit, you probably wouldn't get away with tweeting this today, would you? You brood of vipers, how can you, who are evil, say anything good? For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. He's just called the ruling authority, the religious elite governing officials, a brood of vipers, and he's called them all evil. They can't say nothing good can come out of them, is what he's saying. A good man brings forth good things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. But I tell you that everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have said. So, can you see there that Jesus is really, really critical of these Pharisees for their evil intent and their evil desires? This is so damning. But there's a very difficult word in there, I think, in Matthew 12. It says everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every word they have spoken. All of us here this morning will need to give account for all the words that we've said, for the actions that we've done. And by your words, you'll be acquitted. By your words, you'll be condemned. So please don't sit here and think, I thank you that I'm not like that tax collector. Please don't sit here this morning and think, I'm so glad, God, that I'm not like all those false teachers that I've read about online. Thank you, God, that you brought me up a Christian. I was born into a Christian home. Yes, we thank God for that. We thank God for that. But everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment. It's very damning, isn't it? We need to look at ourselves and our own hearts. We need to look at the evil and the good that's here. And we'll come to that in a few minutes. Matthew 23, Jesus takes this even further. Some of the most shocking words, I think, that Jesus spoke. Very, very difficult. Can you imagine being here around at the time when Jesus was talking to these Pharisees? I mean, not many chapters later, they killed him. Can you see why? Look at this. Matthew 23 is the seven woes, sort of verse 13 onwards. He told them that they taught about God but did not love God. These are some of the fruit, these are the actions that Jesus was pointing out to his disciples, even at the Sermon on the Mount. They preached God but converted people to a dead religion. They taught convoluted rules about what you could and couldn't do. They taught the law, but didn't actually practice some of the most important bits, like justice and mercy and faithfulness. They were very much about do this, this and this, and this is right, this is wrong, and send that person to death. But actually they showed no mercy, justice or faithfulness to God. They presented the appearance of being clean on the outside. They were self-restrained, they didn't get involved in carnal matters, yet they were dirty on the inside. They were full of greed and self-indulgence. They were like whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones. They professed a high regard for their old prophets, yet they themselves were murderous and there was blood on their hands. Those Pharisees were false teachers. Now that seems very extreme, and I'd be pretty sure that if someone walked in here on a Sunday morning, we'd be pretty good at spotting them. We'd be very good at that. I'm sure we would. It wouldn't take us long to work out the things that come out of their mouths. We, as all of us have done for the last few weeks and months, started Googling people and which church they go to and perhaps listen to a bit of their downloaded preaching of the people that have been coming in. Maybe that's right. But what should we be looking for in ourselves and in others? What should we be looking for? Well, if someone is speaking the words of Jesus in the Bible, then that's a good starting point, isn't it? If they're telling us about Jesus and that the only way that we can be right with God is through trusting in the death of Jesus and trusting his resurrection and his perfect life, then we need to listen. The minute anybody starts veering away from that and starts loading on burdens that we can't carry, adding to that fundamental core belief, or taking away from the sufficiency of Jesus for our salvation, then alarm bells should be ringing. And if we're finding ourselves talking to others, and we're finding ourselves saying, oh, but you should probably do this as well, because God will love you a bit more, or don't do that, we need to hold on to the sufficiency of the death and resurrection of Jesus. See, what we need to be looking for and listening to is the gospel, good news. That's what gospel means, doesn't it? We need to be listening out for the good news of Jesus. It's about him and nothing more. We don't need another story. We don't need anything else. The gospel in itself is more than enough. It's a wonderfully beautiful, attractive story. We don't need to load it up with anything else. We don't need to play down anybody else for that matter. There's no point. We don't need to make the opposition look bad. Just make Jesus look brilliant, because he does a good enough job of that himself. We don't need any additional teachings. We don't need to add any more books or philosophies. We just need to focus on the cross of Jesus, knowing that Jesus died for our sins. He died so that our evil core DNA, our mindset, could be transformed, not conformed. Be transformed by the power of this word. That's what Jesus did. He enabled us, who are actually fundamentally bad trees, who are only ever going to bear bad fruit. Guess what? We had a complete transplant because of Jesus. And he's made us into good trees that bear good fruit. He's dealt with all the parasites and the problems and all the diseases and illness that we've got that is sin. And he's enabled us to bring about good fruit. We don't need anything else. Why would you add anything to that? It's just going to ruin it. Why would you do that? But what actions would you expect to see of somebody? Now, I'm sure you've probably been waiting for Galatians 5 for most of this service. What actions would you expect to see of somebody? What fruit would you want to see? Really simple list, isn't it? From Paul in Galatians 5. He talks about the fruit of the Spirit and the works of the flesh. I've not really spotted that until I read that through. The fruit of the Spirit is something that just happens and bears and grows from us, or the thing you have to work at, which is the evil thing. We don't need to work at it. This is God's transforming power in us. The fruit of the Spirit is. This is what we need to look for in each other and in anybody that walks through these doors or those doors, or anybody that emails us and says, I'm interested in this post. We need to look for love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and temperance. And if we're all bearing that fruit, if we're all growing that fruit every day, if our actions, this is about action. This isn't just about a warm, glowy feeling on the inside. This is about us actively loving each other, being joyful. That's like happiness. That's what that means. Being joyful, overflowing joy, peaceful, long-suffering. Please be long-suffering with me. You're going to need to, because we've got a whole eternity to spend together. So long-suffering is something that we're going to need. Gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Each one of those is a study on itself. We need to be discerning. We need to listen to people, and we need to see the actions that come with those words. We need to hear that fruit spoken about from the front. We need to hear about love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faith and self-control and all those things. But let's just finish up, shall we? We need to be cautious. Let's start back where Jesus started. Be careful. Watch out. There are false teachers out there. They are deceptive. They are dangerous. But they will be destroyed. We must be discerning. We need to listen to what's being said, but we need to check their actions. So check the authors of the books that you're reading. Doesn't mean you reject anything by anybody who's very much, apart from somebody who's studied on that particular course. That's not what we're saying. But be careful. Make sure that a person's actions stack up. And stack up against what? What the Bible says. Make sure it's what the Bible is teaching, not adding to, not taking away from anything that's in this word. And take care. We're going to be looking at people coming in. That's great. That's an important thing we need to do. But take care with us. We can't change anyone else. We can change us. We need to be careful with that. I thank you. I'm not like the tax collector attitude. In what way this morning might you and I be those Pharisees that Jesus was speaking to? How might that be us? How would Jesus, if he was preaching a Sermon on the Mount to us now, what judgment would he be passing on the fruit, the actions that he sees amongst us at Hope Church this morning? What would he see us doing? Not the words we say necessarily, as much as the things we actually do. Be careful. Be watchful. Let's make sure that together we're following Jesus so that we can produce the good fruit for his glory. Thank you.